should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life the child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, upwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening, Ajahn.
It's good to see you all again. Some new faces. Yeah. Recently, does anybody know Bianca?
Yeah.
Yeah. She donated 22 meditation cushions for this place. So I was hoping more people would sit on the ground. But it doesn't look like it, but it doesn't matter. Those cushions are still round and plump.
Well, I've got there, I never get up. Yeah, I'll sit on one, but on the chair.
If I sit on them, they just go flat and stay flat. Well, anyways, it's nice to see people supporting this place.
Yeah, very nice.
And yeah, I was just thinking about what to talk about tonight, and I was having breakfast this morning with Jan, Rob and John Arato, the young men who stay here. They prepare breakfast for the monks, and we don't really talk that much because we see each other every day.
Yeah.
So we just sit there quietly, and I was eating my breakfast, and then I was looking at a jar, and it was I was looking at the ingredients of this chili that I like to put on my food sometimes. And the ingredients were very simple, right? It was just chili, salt, vinegar, and water. Chili, salt, vinegar, and water. And something made simply can be, you know, quite tasty, quite good. And the point that I'm trying to make is when we're living life or just like doing this practice, it's best to keep things simply. And the simple things in life are often the best. And that goes to that relates to the meditation practice, and you know, as you all know, you come here to learn how to calm your mind down, and some of you have maybe doing it for a long time. And sometimes when we just complicate things when we practice, and you know, we sit down with our eyes closed, but we're not really committed and focused on the task at hand. And putting it quite simply, we can just follow these teachings of the Buddha, which is very simple, then the results will arise. And one of those things is to make that that commitment to just dedicating the next half an hour, 15 minutes, 20 minutes of your time meditating to your meditation object. And for the most part, the meditation object that we watch is our breathing. Yes, the breath that goes in and the breath that goes out. And it's such a simple thing, but sometimes our conditioning gets in the way. But then it gets to a point in our practice, we have to tell ourselves, why are we wasting so much time? Yeah, we've meditated for so long, but our minds are still racing around. We're not really actually taming the mind. And sometimes we try to overanalyze, we try to make excuses, we try to blame the teacher or the Buddha or whatever. But then there comes to a point where we have to throw away all those excuses and just basically stand up to our own minds and just dedicate the session to just watching our breath go in and go out, go in and go out. And just think about that for a little while. The way we approach our meditation practice, the old habits that we bring into it that hasn't led to any success. And just the idea of how our time has been used. You know, now I'm living here, I'm a lot more busier because I have to plan on for the property next door. So I'm talking to builders, talking to electricians and supporters and whatnot. So my life is getting a lot busier actually, but I don't mind. It's it feels very good to give back to the community. But then you have all these things going on. So then sometimes when you meditate, what you did a few hours ago, you take that into your meditation practice. And it sort of like disturbs the mind. The mind doesn't become peaceful. And so in a sense, when you start the meditation practice, you have to make that clear determination, or that clear intention to just watch the breath or watch your meditation object, and just do whatever you can to let go of whatever happened during the day. And I think that's an approach that we can use from time to time, because you know, when we're practicing the Ajahn Brahm method of just making peace, being kind, being gentle, which is very lovely, yeah? We just sit there, you know, if our mind is thinking about something, we just make peace, be kind, be gentle. If our mind is thinking about something else, we just make peace, be kind, be gentle. And in a sense, that is a very good attitude or mood to develop in one's meditation. But you can see that if you keep on doing that, then the mind doesn't actually become stable or still. One has to start watching an object. And the object that I like to watch, and it's very simple, because there's no verbalization, there's no visualization, there's no preconception. It's just this breath meditation. You know, it's right here in front of us, this very moment. We don't have to go looking for it. We don't have to ask for it to come. It's just right here, right now. So we can just simply put our minds onto the breath and just watch it and just allow our minds to relax into it, we can see the calming effects that the breath has. Just this one simple thing, and it's actually quite calming and actually quite peaceful. And the reason why it's calming and peaceful is because the distracting thoughts, they are starting to disappear, they are starting to vanish, and what is left is a mind which is clear but with the breath. And if you look carefully at your own mind, all the distractions, all the like the struggles or the unhappiness, that is caused from within our own minds. It's not caused from anything else. And a great example is when Ajahn Chah was alive in Thailand, and I'm sure you heard of this story, but and Ajahn Sumedho, he's still alive, Ajahn Sumedho, he's living in Thailand. I think one of the reasons is because the weather is warmer there, and it's better for his health. And he lives with Ajahn Yanadamo, and I actually went to see him when I was there a couple of years ago. And you know, he's getting old, and he comes out to visit people when he can. And he was telling me that it's going to be his I think his last years of travel, because he's finding it difficult to fly in planes. But but he's very, very respected by the Buddhist community and very loved. But when he was a younger monk, he was sweeping the grounds in Wat Pa Phong, and he wasn't very happy, you know. He didn't say anything, he wasn't swearing, he wasn't grumbling, but Ajahn Chah could just see. Just because Ajahn Chah is Ajahn Chah, you can, you know, just read people's body language, and you can see whether, you know, they're having a good time or not. And Ajahn Chah, right there and then, gave him a teaching, and he said, Wat Pa Phong isn't suffering. That's what he said. Wat Pa Phong isn't suffering. And what Ajahn Chah understood was that the suffering that we, a lot of people in today's life, or in life in general, in the past many thousand years ago, they blame suffering on the outside world. They blame it on their environment. They blame it on their partners. They blame it on the weather. As people coming and learning these teachings, we teach people how to look within ourselves, and we can start to see that the suffering comes from within us. And that is where we have to do the work. And that's why I think that's where we have to do the work, is our negativity, the way we look at the world, is what causes us suffering. So that's why Ajahn Brahm teaches, when we meditate, is to make peace, be kind, be gentle. And that is just like developing the wholesome states of mind that the Buddha talked about, developing metta, kindness, and things like that. And that kind of mood and positive emotions help us along the way when we're practicing this very hard path called meditation. Yeah, it's not easy. I've been through it. I still go through it. but you know, as a Buddhist monk, you just keep on persisting, because you've seen because I've seen the examples in real life in monks who have practiced well, who have you know, meditated deeply, and that gives us the inspiration that it's possible. So each and every one of us has a chance, because as human beings, we know how to stay in the present moment. As human beings, we know how to watch something. But the only thing that gets in the way is ourselves. Yeah. We get in the way. We think too much. We lose focus, and things like that. So, yeah, that being said, you know, as we're meditating, we just try to keep it simple, yeah? Like, not too many objects, watch the breath, make peace, be kind, be gentle, and don't give yourself a hard time. If things don't work out, make peace, be kind, be gentle. If you can't watch the breath, make peace, be kind, be gentle. And then eventually, you know, when your mind builds up more space within itself, it will be easier to watch an object of meditation. Okay? Okay, we can start. So we just close our eyes, get into a comfortable position, and just sit still for a second, and just be present. So, as I said earlier, on just make that you know, determination, but with not with force, but with understanding that time is limited for each and every one of us. We're not getting younger, and we don't have that much time to meditate. And whenever we get the chance to meditate, we have to try to make the most of it. So not out of willpower do we place this determination forward, but we place this determination forward with understanding and wisdom. So now we are putting aside all the thinking, whether it's from the past or whether it's from the future, thinking every single thought that you may arise about work or whatever, put that aside. So as we're meditating, what we're actually doing is giving us our minds a break from the world that we're living in, to take time out, to give the mind a rest. So just bring your mind into the present moment. So as we're just sitting here, being centered, not thinking about too much, allowing the present moment to build upon itself. One moment of present moment, another moment of present moment. The more you can stay in this moment, you start to feel calm, you start to feel peaceful. So all you're doing now is just experiencing life without words. You're taking away all the labels. You're just hearing the sounds, but you're not putting a label on it. You're not saying to yourself, that's a car, or that's a truck. Well, that's insects making noise. Sound is just sound. Meditation is about experiencing the moment without words. So as you're falling deeper into the present moment, there's a sense of peace that arises within the mind. You can actually feel it. You can actually experience it. And that's the peace, you could say, that's something that you can direct your mind towards. Direct your mind towards this peace, and direct your mind towards this calm. So as you're experiencing the moment without words, your body is calming down. When your body is calm, and when your mind is calm, the breath is right there in front of you. It's obvious. And it's very easy for you to turn your attention onto the breath. So just allow your mind fill itself up with the breath. Just as one simple object of meditation. One simple object equals a sense of simplicity within our minds. The simpleness of the breath takes away the complexities of our lives. Any questions about meditation? Actually, we've got some good news from Cambodia.
Oh.
Sukhakama is coming back.
Oh, cool.
On the 8th of April. Yeah. I'm not sure in the morning or in the evening. But if you're missing him, come on the 9th. Come here on the 9th. That's good news. Has anybody got any questions about meditation? And I was just thinking anyways, and I think one of the stories in the suttas is that there was a monk named Sona, and he was doing walking meditation, and I think he could, because he was he came from a rich family, so he had really soft feet. So he was doing walking meditation, he was cutting up his feet, it's like bleeding everywhere. So the Buddha saw this and gave him some advice. And the Buddha, being the Buddha, being a wise man, knew that Sona used to be a musician, and he would play a string instrument. And so the Buddha was giving him advice on how to meditate, meditate in a way where you get the most benefit out of it. And he said, he compared it to the way a musician would play an instrument. And he said that sometimes when you play an instrument, sometimes when the strings are too loose, it doesn't make a nice sound. And sometimes if you play an instrument, if the strings are too tight, then you end up snapping the string. And you can see that within our own minds. Sometimes when we're just a little bit too lazy, our minds will start to wander here and there. We're not focused. And on the other hand, when we're too tight, we're using up too much force. We create like a tightness, a discomfort, even a headache within our minds. So the Buddha said, when you play an instrument, you have to tune it right and get it perfect. So when you play the instrument, it sounds beautiful, it sounds wonderful. And in the same way, when we're watching our breath, we just got to find that right amount of effort to be able to keep the mind, to keep the mind on the breath, so that it becomes enjoyable, it becomes pleasant, and we can start to feel that it's actually working for us. Any questions? Sarah?
There's a letter, well, a couple of ladies in our senior and I do meditation every time they come, nearly half an hour. But they don't seem to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, I just say, oh, keep practicing. Do it here, but I don't even think they manage it when they're here, you know.
Yeah.
But saying that, I feel they really need it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel a bit frustrated about it because I think, oh, you really need it, you know.
Mm.
And of course, you can't sort of point the finger up and say, you've got to do it.
Yeah.
But it's such a shame, I think, you know.
Yeah, sometimes because it's something new to them. And like I said before, and like many people know, that meditation is not the easiest thing in the world to do. And especially when you're sitting down with your eyes closed, sometimes it's hard to get a grip of what's happening. So that's why you know, in the Buddhist tradition, there's also the practice of walking meditation. It's like more of a physical meditation. You can like compare it to like doing yoga or tai chi, but basically what you're doing is you're just pacing, you know, back and forth.
Yeah, really.
Back and forth. So, you know, when you're here with the seniors group,
how would you say do it?
You can just do it outside here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do walking better. Actually.
They can do walking, yeah, because it's like in the Buddhist text, things are known as like gross, medium, or refined, and like gross is like a something which is a more like more of a an obvious, you know, thing that's happening. So you could say the walking meditation is a more grosser form of walking meditation because you're actually moving your body. You're physically moving up and down, walking up and down. So it's easier to be able to stay in the moment, watching the movement of the body, watching the feet touching the ground. And somewhat like the sitting meditation is a more of a refined practice. When you're sitting down, the breath is actually quite subtle. So the mind is not, you know, sharp enough or mindful enough to be able to watch it. Whereas, you know, when you're walking, you know, moving the physical body is actually a lot easier for the mind to stay with the body, if you know what I mean. Yeah, if you know what I mean.
I mean, I do know what you mean by, because I've read about it, but I've never done it myself. But
it's very easy, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good answer, thanks.
So you can just try that.
No, it's not.
Why?
Oh, well, I guess some can do the walking meditation, others just crash into the wall.
There's actually a funny story. There was this one monk who just finished his meal and he would do walking meditation just to help with his digestion. And he actually fell asleep when he was walking. And he knew he fell asleep when he actually actually walked into the brick wall. He walked into the brick wall and woke him up.
You know, the walking tracks with the yellow strips up at Jung Grove?
Yeah.
Yeah, that wall.
Oh, you hit the wall, did you?
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to close your eyes altogether.
But when you're teaching how to do that, Sarah, you sort of tell them not to look around, because that'll just distract them. Just tell them to just look forward, like
just,
maybe like a meter or two in front of them, and just pace back and forth. So you can sort of move the tables aside, and then you can just pace back and forth for like 10 or 15 minutes.
I just didn't think of it. I was sort of wondering.
Yeah.
Well, just thinking, oh, what a shame, really, but that's a good answer.
Yeah. You can try that, yeah.
And it's got a railing so you won't fall off the...
But yeah, don't tell them not to walk in the bush, otherwise they might get bitten by ticks. Any other questions, comments? Actually, this place got more ticks than Bodhinyana, hey?
Really?
Yeah, I get a lot of tick bites, yeah.
Ticks are all...
Yeah, but it's okay. I'll survive.
I thought ticks were the ones that got into you.
They're parasites.
Yeah,
they put their palms into
you. Oh, you've got them.
And they inject the poison and they start...
Wow, do you not pull them out? They're like a baked bean, aren't they?
They're so small you can't see them.
Ah.
Yeah.
Ah, right.
So, yeah.
Someone told me to put toothpaste on them.
Oh, yeah.
Anything that blocks your breathing.
Yeah, they drop off.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because
they inject their poison into you. I heard that you're supposed to just...
Yeah, sometimes I just like pull them out.
Because the ones we got in England were like baked beans.
Oh, they're big.
Yeah.
They're root ticks.
Yeah. Oh. But what I found is...
I didn't get them, but the dog did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When they bite you and they just move on, then they don't really leave that much of a wound. It's only when you start pulling them out and then they just inject a lot of poison as you're pulling them out. So it doesn't matter.
Don't pull me up. The trouble is the head stays in.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And burrows down.
Yeah. holy blood. Anyways, okay, we just finish off here.
I was going to say, I remember my mother taking ticks off the dog.
Oh, yeah.
With a cigarette. Oh. Used a cigarette and then let go.
Oh, yeah.
They were blown up as big as a marble from the blood.
Oh, yeah, they're the big ones, yeah. We've got a new person in the back. New person?
I came last week.
I wasn't here last week, so welcome. Were you new last week? Okay, it's good to see you. Okay, Bob, take it away, please.
Through the goodness that arises from our practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of the right virtue
my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all the virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guiding spirits of the earth, and the world of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life, may they soon attain the threefold bliss, and realize the deathless, through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, and surpasses is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble Lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be.